drive. My father grips his steering wheel until his knuckles are white. He starts the car and puts it in reverse. I should have beat the shit out of him the night I pulled him off you in the shower. I don't even try to explain that he wasn't protecting me from Samson that night. Samson was helping me, but at this point, another explanation would be futile. I just go with a blanket statement. He's not a bad person, Dad. My father puts the car back in park. He faces me, his expression unyielding. I don't know where I went wrong as a father, but I did not raise a daughter who would defend a guy who lied to her the entire summer. You think he cares about you? He doesn't care about anyone but himself. Is he serious? Did he actually have the audacity to say he raised me? I glare at him, my hand on the door handle. You didn't raise a daughter at all. If anyone is lying in this scenario, it's you. I open my door and get out of his car. There's no way I want to be stuck with him all the way back to Bolivar Peninsula. Get back in the car, Bea. No, I'm calling Sarah to come pick me up. I sit down on the curb next to the car. My father gets out of the car while I pull out my phone. He kicks at the gravel and motions toward the car. Get in, I'll take you home. I wipe tears from my eyes after I dial Sarah's number. I'm not getting in your car. You can leave now. My father doesn't leave. Sarah agrees to come pick me up, but my father sits patiently in his car until she arrives. Chapter 28. It's been an agonizing week, with no news from Samson, nothing at all. I've tried to visit him twice, but he refuses to see me now. I have absolutely no way of communicating with him. All I have to cling to are the memories of the time we spent together, and I'm worried those will start to fade if I don't at least get to hear his voice. Am I really just expected to move on? Forget about him? Go to college like he didn't force me to become a completely different, better version of myself this summer? I stopped talking about Samson to anyone in this house. I don't even want his name brought up because it just leads to arguments. I've barely left my room all week. I occupy my days with mindless TV shows and visits to Marjorie's house. She's the only one I'll speak to about him. She's the only one on my side. I've been alternating between the two shirts that were in Samson's backpack all week, but they no longer smell like him. They smell like me now, which is why I'm snuggled up to his backpack watching a marathon of a British baking show. I don't know what to do with his things. I doubt he cares to keep toiletries, and there wasn't anything of value in his backpack other than the poems his father wrote to him. But I don't want to give them to Marjorie to get to him because I feel like they're my last connection to him. They might one day be the only excuse I have to get him to speak to me. I'm going to have to move on at some point. I know this, but as long as I'm still here and he's still in jail, I can't focus on anything else. I readjust the backpack in my arms to use it as a partial pillow, but something hard pokes at my temple. I open it up to see if I missed an item, but I see nothing. I move my hand around inside the backpack and find a zipper I didn't catch before. I immediately sit up and unzip it. I pull out a small, hardbound notebook. It's only about 4 inches in length. I flip it open and it's full of names and addresses and what look like grocery lists. I flip through several pages, unable to make sense of any of it. But then I get to a page with Marjorie's name and address on it. Marjorie Naples, date of stay, 2/4/15 to 2/8/15. $815 worth of food. Repaired roof. Replace 2 pieces of siding on north side of house damaged by wind. There are several more names and addresses that follow Marjorie's, but I need to know the significance of the dates. I pick up my phone and call her. Hello? Hey, it's Bea. Quick question, are the dates February 4th to February 8th this year of any significance to you? Marjorie chews on that thought for a moment. I'm almost positive those are the days I was in the hospital after my heart attack. Why? Just something I found in Samson's backpack. I'll bring it over later so you can give it to Kevin. I tell her goodbye and end the call, then I start skimming through all the other things he's written down. The most common address is the one next door for David Silver. There are several dates listed, most of them between March and last week. Beneath David's name is a list of repairs. Tightened several loose slats on bedroom balcony railing, replaced a broken fuse in the breaker box, sealed leak in pipe in outdoor shower. The lists go on. There are odd jobs he's done for people and how much he got paid for each job, which explains how he sometimes had money for things like dinner and tattoos. There are also lists of people he'd done work for that he didn't take pay from. Every day for the past 7 months is accounted for. Every item of food he ate from someone's refrigerator without their permission, every repair he made to someone's house. He's been keeping track of all of it. But why? Did he feel like repairing these properties for free was balancing out the fact that he was staying in them without permission? Could this possibly be the proof the court needs to know he doesn't deserve all the charges being brought against him? I rush downstairs and find my father and Alana on the living room sofa. Sarah and Marcos are together on the love seat. They're all watching Wheel of Fortune, but my father mutes it when he sees I've come downstairs for the first time today. I hand the notebook to my father. This belongs to Samson. He takes the notebook from me and begins flipping through it. It's a detailed list of every place he stayed and how he repaid them. My father stands up, still flipping through the notebook. This could help him. My voice is full of hope for the first time since he was arrested. If we can prove he was trying to do the right thing, it could help his defense. My father sighs before he even makes it a few pages into the book. He closes it and hands it back to me. It's a detailed list of everything he's done wrong. It'll hurt him, not help him. You don't know that. Bea, he's only being charged on 2 counts of breaking and entering. If you take that to the police and show them how many more houses he broke into, they're going to use it to add to his charges, not take away from them. He looks frustrated as he takes a step closer to me. Please let this go. You're too young to let a guy you barely know consume your life like this. He messed up, and he has to pay the consequences for that. Alana is standing now. She grips my father's arm in support and says, Your father is right, Bea. There's nothing you can do but move forward. Sarah and Marcos are still seated on the love seat, looking at me in a way that makes me feel pathetic. All of them think I'm pathetic. None of them care what happens to Samson, and none of them believe in what we had. For once in my life, I had someone who actually cared about me, and all 4 of them think I'm incapable of knowing what true love is. I know what true love is, because I spent my whole life knowing what it isn't. My mother died. It feels like all the air in the room is sucked out after I say that. Alana's hand goes over her mouth. My father shakes his head in disbelief. What? When? The night I called you and asked if I could come here, she overdosed because she's been an addict for as long as I can remember. I have had no one in my corner, not you, not my mother, no one. I have been all alone my whole goddamn life. Samson is the first person who ever showed up and cheered for me. My father walks over to me, his face contorted into both confusion and sympathy. Why would you not tell me something like this? He runs a hand down his face and mutters, Christ, Bea. He tries to pull me in for a hug, but I back away. I turn around to head toward the stairs, but my father calls after me, Wait, we need to discuss this. Now that my rage has surfaced, I feel like I'm drowning in it. I need to get it all out while I have the chance. I spin around and face my father again. Discuss what? Everything else I kept from you? Do you want to know about how I lied when I met you at the airport? The airline didn't lose my luggage. I never had anything at all, because every penny you ever sent Janine, she kept for herself. I had to start fucking a guy for money when I was 15 just so I would have food to eat. So fuck you, Brian. You aren't my father. You never have been, and you never will be. I don't bother to wait for any of their reactions. I stomp up the stairs and slam my bedroom door. My father opens it about 30 seconds later. Please leave, I say, my voice completely devoid of emotion now.
We need to talk about this.
I want to be alone.
Bea,
he says pleadingly, stepping into the room. I stomp to the bedroom door, refusing to let the look on his face get to me. You've spent 19 years being an uninvolved father. I am not in the mood for you to finally get involved tonight. Please, just leave me alone. So many things pass through my father's eyes in this moment. Sadness, regret, empathy. But I don't allow any of his feelings to affect my own. I stare at him stoically until he finally nods and backs out of my bedroom. I close the door. I fall onto the bed and pull Samson's notebook to my chest. To them, this notebook may be a list of everyone on this peninsula he's wronged, but to me, it's further proof that his intentions were good. He tried to do the right thing with non-existent means. I flip through the notebook again, reading every page, touching the words with the tip of my finger, tracing his sloppy handwriting. I read the address of every place he's ever stayed. Half of the notebook is filled with pages of his handwriting. It's choppy and hard to read in places, like he'd write these things in a hurry and then close the notebook before he got caught. I flip toward the end of the notebook and pause on a page that's different from the rest. It's different because my name is at the top of the page. I pull the notebook flat to my chest and close my eyes. Whatever he wrote was short, but that was my name. I breathe in and out very slowly several times until my heart rate returns to normal. Then I pull the notebook away from my chest and read his words.
Bea, my father once told me love is a lot like water. It can be calm. Raging, threatening, soothing. Water will be many things, but even in all its forms, it will always be water. You are my water. I think I might be yours too. If you're reading this, it means I've evaporated. But it doesn't mean you should evaporate too. Go flood the whole goddamn world, Bea.
It's the last thing he wrote in the notebook. It's like he was afraid he'd be arrested before he could tell me goodbye. I read the note several times with tears falling onto the page. This is Samson. I don't care what anyone else believes. This is who I'm going to hold on to until the day he's released. This is also the reason I refuse to leave. He needs my help. I'm all he has. There's no way I can just walk away from him right now. The thought of leaving this town before knowing his fate is a selfish move. He thinks he's doing me a favor, but he has no idea what his decision is doing to me. If he knew, he'd beg me to stay. There's a light tap on my door. Bea, can I come in? Sarah peeks her head in, but I'm not in the mood to argue. I'm not even sure I have the strength to say that out loud. I just clutch the notebook with his words to my chest and I roll over and face the wall. Sarah crawls into the bed with me and wraps her arm around me from behind. She says nothing. She just quietly slips into her role as a big sister and stays with me until I fall asleep. Chapter 29. The sunrise is the only peaceful thing in my life at this point. I've been out here waiting on it since 5 o'clock this morning. I couldn't sleep. How am I expected to sleep after the last week I've had? Every time I close my eyes, I see Samson walking away from me without looking back.
I want to remember all the times he looked at me with hope and enthusiasm and intensity, but all I see is that last moment where he left me crying and alone. I'm afraid that's how I'm going to remember him, and that's not how I want our goodbye to be. I'm confident I can change his mind. I'm confident I can help him. I have a job interview at the only donut shop on the peninsula today. I'm going to save up every penny I can to help him. I know he doesn't want that, but it's the least I can do for everything he brought into my life this summer. It's certainly going to remain a point of contention between my father and me while I stay in this house with him. He thinks I'm being ridiculous for not moving to Pennsylvania. I think he's being ridiculous for expecting me to walk away from someone who has absolutely no one else. Not many people know loneliness like Samson and I do. I also don't know how my father expects me to just start over again in a new state for the second time this summer. I don't have the energy to start over again. I feel completely drained. I don't have the energy to move across the country, and I especially don't have the energy to play volleyball in order to qualify for my scholarship. I'm not even sure I'll have the energy to get up and make donuts every day if I get the job, but knowing every cent will go to help Samson will likely make it worth it. My attention is pulled to my bedroom door just as the sun begins to peek over the horizon. My father pokes his head out of my bedroom and my whole body sighs due to his presence. It was too late to argue with him last night, and it's too early to argue with him this morning. He looks relieved to see me sitting out here. He probably thought I ran away in the middle of the night when he saw I wasn't in my bed just now. I've wanted to run away so many times. But where would I go? I feel like I no longer belong anywhere. Samson was the first place I felt I belonged, and that was ripped from me. My father sits down next to me. I don't ease into his comfort like I eased into Samson's. I'm stiff and unyielding. He watches the sunrise with me, but his presence ruins it. It's hard to find the beauty in it when I have so much anger directed at the man sitting next to me. "Remember the first time we went to the beach?" he asks. I shake my head. I've never been to the beach before this summer. "Yes, you have. You were young, though. Maybe you don't remember it. But I took you to Santa Monica when you were about 4 or 5. I finally make eye contact with him. "I've been to California." "Yeah. You don't remember?" "No." His expression is regretful for a moment, but then he removes his arm from the back of the chair and stands up. "I'll be right back. I have pictures here somewhere. I grabbed the album from our house in Houston when I found out you were coming." He has pictures of my childhood, supposedly on a beach. I'll believe it when I see it. A few minutes later, my father comes back with a photo album. He takes his seat in the chair again and opens it up, sliding it over to me. I flip through the photos and feel like I'm looking at someone else's life. There are so many pictures of me that I don't even remember being taken. Days I have absolutely no recollection of. I get to a section of pictures of me running in the sand, and I can't connect them to a memory. I probably didn't even realize the meaning behind a road trip at that age. "When was this?" I ask, pointing to a picture with me sitting at a table in front of a birthday cake, but there's a small Christmas tree in the background. My birthday is months before Christmas, and I normally only visited my father in the summer. "I don't remember having Christmas with you." "Technically, you didn't. Since you only came in the summer, I'd roll all the holidays into one big celebration." I vaguely remember that now that he mentions it. I have faded memories of being painfully full while opening presents, but that was so long ago, and those memories didn't carry with me through the years. Neither did the traditions, apparently. "Why did you stop?" I ask him.
"I don't know, honestly. You started to grow up, and every year when you would come visit, you seemed less interested in the silly things, or maybe I just assumed you were. You were such a quiet child. It was hard to get anything out of you."
I blame my mother for that. I flip through the album and pause on a picture of me sitting in my father's lap.
We're both smiling at the camera. He has his arm around me and I'm snuggled against him. All these years, I didn't think he was ever affectionate with me. There were so many years of him not being affectionate with me. Those are the things I remember the most. I run my finger over the picture, saddened by whatever happened between us to change our relationship. When did you stop treating me like your daughter? My father sighs, and his sigh is full of so many things.
I was 21 when you were born. I never knew what I was doing with you. It was easier to fake when you were little, but as you grew up, I felt guilty. That guilt started working its way into our time together. I felt like your visits with me were an inconvenience for you.
I shake my head. It was the only thing I ever looked forward to.
I wish I'd known that, he says quietly. I'm starting to wish I'd told him.
If there's one thing I learned from Samson this summer, it's that holding everything in accomplishes nothing. It just causes the truth to hurt even worse in the end.
I had no idea what kind of mother she was, Bea. Sarah told me some things last night that you told her, and I just... His voice sounds shaky, like he's working to hold back tears. I did so many things wrong. I have no excuse. You have every right to be resentful. Because you're right. I should have fought harder to get to know you. I should have fought harder to spend more time with you.
My father takes the photo album from me and sets it on the chair next to him. He faces me with an expression full of unease.
I feel like what you're doing, allowing this guy's fate to dictate your own future. It's my fault, because I never set an example for you. But despite that, you turned out to be the amazing person that you are, and that is not because of me. It's because of you. You're a fighter. So naturally, you want to stay and fight for Samson. Maybe it's because you see so much of yourself in him. But what if he's not who you think he is, and you make the wrong decision?
But what if he's exactly who I think he is? My father takes my right hand and holds it between both of his. He looks so sincere, staring at me with such raw honesty.
If Samson is the person you think he is, what do you think he would want for you? Do you think he would want you to give up everything you've worked for?
I look away from my father toward the sunrise. I'm holding all my feelings in my throat.
I love you, Bea. Enough to admit that you've been let down by too many people in your life, me being one of them. The only person who has never been completely loyal to you is you. You're doing yourself a disservice by not putting yourself first right now.
I lean forward and hold my head in my hands. I squeeze my eyes shut. I know that's what Samson wants, for me to put myself before him. I just don't want him to want that for me. My father rubs his hand over my back, and the feeling is so soothing, I lean into him, wrapping my arms around him. He hugs me back, running a gentle hand over my head.
I know it hurts, he whispers. I wish I could take that pain away from you.
It does hurt. It's fucking brutal. It isn't fair. I finally have something good in my life, and now I'm being forced to leave it behind. They're right, though. Everyone is right but me. I need to put myself first. It's what I've always done, and it's worked for me so far. I think about the letter Samson wrote to me, and that last line that got caught up in my heart.
Go flood the whole goddamn world, Bea.
I inhale a gulp of the salty morning air, knowing I won't get very many more of them before I leave for Pennsylvania. Will you take care of Pepperjack Cheese while I'm gone? My father sighs with relief. Of course I will. He presses a soft kiss into my hair.
I love you, Bea.
There's so much truth in his words, and for the first time, I allow myself to believe him. This is the moment I release it all. Every single thing from my childhood that's made my heart so heavy. I release my anger toward my father. I even release my anger toward my mother. The only thing I'm going to hold on to from this point forward are the good things. I may not be ending the summer with Samson by my side, but I'm ending it with something I didn't have when I showed up here. A family. Chapter 30. My roommate is a girl from Los Angeles. Her name is Sierra, with a C. We get along okay, but I'm trying to stay focused on school and volleyball, so I haven't hung out with her outside of our dorm room. Other than when we're both in here doing homework or sleeping, I don't see her much. It's weird how I lived across the hall from Sarah for a summer and saw her more than I see the person living in the same room with me now. I miss Sarah, even though we text every day. So do my father and I. None of us discuss Samson, though. Not since that morning I decided to come to Pennsylvania. I need everyone to believe that I've moved on, but I'm not sure how to. I think about him all the time. I'll see something or hear something and feel an intense need to tell him about it. But I can't because he's made sure to cut off any form of communication I could have with him. I wrote him one letter and it was returned to me. I cried that entire afternoon, but decided not to write him after that. His court hearing was this morning. Based on all the charges, he's looking at several years of potential prison time. I've been waiting by my phone all day for a phone call from Kevin. That's all I've been doing, staring at my phone, waiting. I finally get tired of it and dial Kevin's number. I know he said he'd call me after Samson's sentencing, but maybe he got held up. I look behind me to make sure Sierra is still in the shower and then sit up straight on my bed when Kevin answers.
I was about to call you.
What happened? Kevin sighs, and I feel all the weight of Samson's sentence in that sigh.
Good news and bad news. We were able to get the breaking and entering charges downgraded to trespassing, but they wouldn't budge on the arson charge because of the security footage.
My arm is wrapped tightly around my stomach. How long, Kevin?
6 years, but he'll likely get out in 4.
I press my hand to my forehead and drop my head between my shoulders. Why so long? That's so long.
It could have been much worse. He was facing 10 years for the arson alone. Had he not already violated parole in the past, he probably would have been slapped on the wrist. But this isn't his first offense, Bea.
But did you explain to the judge why he violated parole? He had no money. How can they expect people to pay parole fees when they have no money?
I know it's not the news you wanted, but it's better than it could have been.
I'm so upset. I honestly didn't think he would be sentenced to that much time. Rapists get less time than he did. What is wrong with our judicial system?
Everything. You're in college. Maybe you should become a lawyer and do something about it.
Maybe I will. I haven't declared a major yet, and nothing pisses me off more than thinking of all the people who fell through the cracks. What prison are they sending him to?
Huntsville, Texas.
Do you have a mailing address for him? I can hear Kevin's hesitation over the phone.
He doesn't want visitors or mail. My name is the only one on his list besides my mother's.
I figured as much. Samson is going to be stubborn about this until the day he's out. I'm calling you every month until he's released, but please call me first if there are any changes or if he gets out early on parole, anything at all, even if he's moved to a different location.
Can I give you a piece of advice, Bea?
I roll my eyes, waiting for another lecture from someone else who doesn't know Samson at all.
If you were my daughter, I'd tell you to move on. You're putting too much effort into this guy, and no one knows him well enough to know if he's worth that kind of energy.
What if Samson was your son? I ask him. Would you want everyone to just give up on him? Kevin sighs heavily before saying,
"Point taken. Guess I'll talk to you next month."
He ends the call. I set my phone down on the dresser, completely disappointed, helpless.
You have a boyfriend in jail?
I spin around at the sound of Sierra's voice. My first instinct is to lie to her because that's what I've always done, hide my truth from everyone around me. I don't think that's who I want to be anymore, though. No, he's not my boyfriend, just someone I care about.
Sierra faces the mirror and holds a shirt up to her chest.
Good, because there's a party tonight and I want you to come. There will be so many guys there.
She tosses the shirt aside and holds up another one.
And girls too, if that's what you prefer.
I stare at Sierra as she watches herself in the mirror. There's anticipation in her eyes and very little damage. She's who I wish I could be right now, someone excited for the fun parts of college life and not at all weighed down by the things she might have had to overcome to get here. It hasn't felt fair of me to have fun when Samson is stuck behind bars, so all I've done since I arrived on campus is study and play volleyball and research ways to break people out of prison. No amount of moping is going to change Samson's fate. And even though he's cut off communication with me, I know exactly why he's done it. He knows I'll be too focused and worried about him if I stay in constant contact with him. I can't be angry at him for that. And when I can't stay angry at him, how am I supposed to forget him? No one will change Samson's mind, though. I know that for a fact, because if the roles were reversed, I'd want the exact same things he wants for me. I understand his intentions in every part of me. How would he react if he found out I spent my entire time in college as depressed and alone as I was in high school? He would be so disappointed if I wasted these years. I can either choose to stick to a lonely road of hope that may never be met, or I can figure out who I am while I'm in this setting. What version of myself can I be while I'm here? I run my index fingers under my eyes. I'm emotional for a lot of reasons, but mostly because I feel like I have to truly release myself of Samson in this moment, or he'll weigh me down for the next several years of my life. I don't want that, and neither does he.
Whoa, Sierra says, spinning around to look at me. I didn't mean to upset you. You don't have to go.
I smile at her. No, I want to. I want to go to a party with you. I think I might be a fun person.
Sierra pushes her bottom lip out like my words just made her sad.
Of course you're fun, Bea. Here, she tosses me the shirt she was holding. This color will look better on you.
I stand up and hold the shirt up to myself. I look at my reflection in the mirror. I can feel the sadness inside of me, but I don't see it on my face. I've always been good at hiding what I'm feeling.
Want me to do your makeup? She asks. I nod. Yeah, I'd like that.
Sierra walks back to the bathroom. I glance next to the bathroom door at the picture of Mother Teresa I hung on the wall the day I arrived. I wonder what version of herself my mother could have been if it weren't for her addictions. I wish I could have known that version. For her sake, that's the version of her I'm going to choose to miss. The person she never had the chance to be.
I kiss my fingers and then press them against the picture as I walk past it and into the bathroom. Sierra is sorting her makeup.
I promised myself when I first met her that I wasn't going to prejudge her by labeling her a locker room girl like I almost did with Sarah. No matter who Sierra was in high school or who I was, we're all made up of more than our past behaviors, good or bad. I no longer want to be the version of myself who judged people before accepting them. I was projecting all the behaviors I resented. Sierra looks at my reflection in the mirror and smiles like she's just as excited as Sarah would be to glam me up. I smile back at her and pretend to be excited too. If I have to pretend my way through this entire year, it's what I'm going to do. I'm going to smile so much that my fake smile eventually becomes real.
Chapter 31. Fall 2019. Today has the markings of being a perfect day. It's October and the sun is out. But it's cool enough that I've been sitting on the hood of my car for the last 2 hours and haven't even broken a sweat. But despite the potential for the day, things could still end in severe disappointment. I have no idea. How will Samson react when he walks through those doors? Who will he be? Who has he become? There's a saying from Maya Angelou that reminds me of our situation. When someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time. I've clung to that saying so tightly it feels carved into my bones. I always go back to it when I start to have doubts because I want to believe the summer I spent with Samson was the real Samson. I want to believe that he's hoping I'm waiting for him as much as I'm hoping he wants me here. But even if he isn't, I think enough time has passed that my heart bone has healed. There's still a crack in it. I sometimes feel it aching, mostly when it's late at night and I'm unable to sleep. It's been well over 4 years since the last time I saw him, and my thoughts of him continue to separate further apart by stretches of thoughts that don't involve Samson. But I don't know if that's because I'm trying to protect myself from what could potentially happen today, or if it's because Samson really was just one summer fling in a life filled with other seasons. That's the worst outcome I can imagine. That all the moments we shared that left such a lasting impact on me weren't profound for him at all. I've thought about saving myself the potential embarrassment. He might see me out here waiting on him and barely remember me. Or worse, he could feel sorry for the girl who hung on after all this time. Either of those options are worth the risk, because the idea of him walking out those doors to no one sounds like the saddest outcome of all. I'd rather be here and him not want me here than not be here when he hopes I am. Kevin called last week and said Samson was approved for early release. I knew that's what he was going to tell me before I even answered his phone call because Kevin never calls me. I'm the one who calls him to check if there are updates. I call him so much I'm probably more annoying to him than a telemarketer. I'm sitting cross-legged on the hood, eating an apple I just pulled out of my bag. I've been here going on 4 hours now. There's a man in the car next to me who is also waiting on someone to be released. He gets out to stretch his legs and then leans against his car.
"Who are you here for?"
he asks. I don't know how to answer that, so I shrug. An old friend who may not even want me here. He kicks at a rock.
"I'm here for my brother. Third time picking him up. Hopefully this will be his last go."
"Hopefully," I say, but I doubt it. I've learned enough about the prison system during my time in college that I have very little faith in the system's ability to properly rehabilitate offenders. It's why I'm in law school now. I'm convinced Samson wouldn't be in the position he's in if he would have had better access to resources when he was released the first time. Even if I don't end up with Samson by the end of this, I've ended up with a new passion because of it. "What time do they usually open the doors?" I ask the man. The guy looks at his watch.
"I figured it would be before lunch. They're running behind today."
I reach into my bag that's sitting on the hood next to me. "You hungry? I have chips." He holds up his hands, so I toss them at him.
"Thanks," he says, opening the bag.
He pops one into his mouth.
"Good luck with your friend."
I smile. "Good luck to your brother." I take another bite of my apple and lean back onto my windshield. I lift my arm and run my fingers over my pinwheel tattoo. I hated this tattoo after Samson was arrested. It was supposed to bring me good luck, but instead it felt like my world became worse than before I moved to Texas. It took at least a year for me to fully appreciate this tattoo. Aside from everything that happened with Samson being arrested, every other aspect of my life improved after getting this tattoo. I became closer to my father and his new family. Sarah is not only my sister now, but my absolute best friend in the world. I got accepted to law school. I never would have thought when I picked up a volleyball for the first time as a kid that it would lead to me becoming a lawyer, me. The lonely girl who once had to do unthinkable things to feed herself is going to be a damn lawyer.
I think maybe this tattoo really did turn my luck around in the end. Not in the way I expected it to in that moment, but now that I'm at this point in my life, I can see all the good things that came from that summer. Samson being one of those good things, no matter who he is today. I'm at a point in my life where the outcome of my future won't be determined by the outcome of any potential relationship. Do I want him to be who I've always believed him to be? Absolutely. Will I crumble if he isn't? Not at all. I am still made of steel. Come at me, world. You can't damage the impermeable.
The door is opening,
the man in the car next to me says. I immediately sit up and drop my apple into my bag next to me. I press my palm against my chest and exhale as someone begins to exit the building. It isn't Samson. I would slide off the car and stand up, but I'm scared my legs are too weak to hold me. I'm about 20 feet away from the entrance, but there's a chance he won't see me if he's not expecting someone to be waiting for him. The man who just walked out looks to be in his 50s. He scans the parking lot until he finds the car next to mine. He nods his head, and his brother doesn't even get out of his car. The man walks over and climbs into the passenger seat, and they take off like this is an airport and these trips are normal. I'm still sitting cross-legged on the hood when I finally see him. Samson emerges from the building and shields his eyes from the sunlight while he looks down the sidewalk toward the bus. My heart is beating so fast, way faster than I thought it would. It's like all the feelings I ever had as a 19-year-old girl are waking up all at the same time. He looks almost the same, more man than boy now, and his hair is a little darker. But other than that, he looks exactly like he looks in my memories. He pushes his hair away from his face and begins walking toward the bus lot without glancing into the parking lot. I don't know if I should call his name or run up to him. He's walking away from me. I press my palms against the hood, prepared to slide off of it when he stops walking. He stands still for a moment with his back to me while I hold my breath in anticipation. It's as if he wants to look, but he's scared he won't find anyone. Eventually, he begins to turn around as if he can sense my presence. His eyes connect with mine, and he stares at me for so long. He's just as unreadable now as he was back then, but I don't have to know what he's thinking to feel the emotions being released between us. He brings his hands up to the back of his neck and spins around like he can't look at me for another second. I see the roll of his shoulders as he slowly exhales. He faces me again, this time with a very touching expression. "Did you go to college, Bea?" He yells it across the parking lot like it's the most important question in the world, more important than any other thought that might be going through his head. As soon as he asks me that, a lone, fat tear rolls down my cheek. I nod. When I do, it's like all the tension in his soul releases in that moment. I'm still sitting on the hood of my car, but even from here, I can see the furrow of his brow. I want to walk over to him and smooth it out and tell him it's finally okay. He stares at the concrete like he doesn't know what to do, but then he figures it out because he begins walking toward me with urgency. He runs the last 10 feet, and I gasp when he meets the car because he doesn't stop there. He crawls onto the hood and immediately onto me until I'm forced to lean back against my windshield. Then his mouth is on mine. And he's apologizing to me with a silent fierceness I feel to my core. I wrap my arms around his neck, and it's as if a single second never even passed. We kiss on the hood of my car for several seconds until Samson can't seem to stand it anymore. He pulls away and hops off the car, then grabs my waist and pulls me to the edge, lowering my feet to the pavement. He wraps his arms around me and hugs me tighter than the first hug he ever gave me. The next few minutes are a combination of tears, mostly mine, and kissing each other, and staring at each other in disbelief. I had so many questions coming into this, but now I can't think of a single one.
When we stop kissing long enough for him to speak, he says,
I probably should have asked if you were seeing someone before I did that.
I smile with a strong shake of my head. I'm very single. He kisses me again slowly, and then stares at my mouth like it's the thing he's missed the most. I'm sorry. I forgive you. And it really is as simple as that. His eyebrows draw apart with relief. He pulls me tightly against him and releases a heavy sigh into my hair.
I can't believe you're really here.
He picks me up and spins me around once before setting me back down on my feet. He rests our foreheads together and smiles.
What now?
I laugh. I have no idea. The rest of my day was contingent upon the outcome of this moment.
So was mine.
He grabs my hands and pulls them up to his mouth, kissing my knuckles. Then he tucks my fists against his chest and says,
I need to see Daria.
His words remind me of a line in one of his father's poems. I've read them so many times I have them memorized, so I say it out loud. Because when a man says, I'm going home, he should be heading for the sea. I start to pull away from him so I can open my car door, but Samson grips my hand and pulls me right back.
My father wrote that. You have my backpack?
It's not until this moment I realize Samson probably assumed his backpack was gone forever. Yeah, I took it the night they arrested you.
You kept my father's poems for me?
I nod. Of course I did. There's a pained look in his eyes, as if he's trying to hold back tears. Then he closes the distance between us and slides his fingers into my hair, cradling my head in his hands.
Thank you for believing in me, Bea.
You believed in me first, Samson. It's the least I could do. Chapter 32. When we finally got to the beach, he didn't even pause to appreciate it. He got out of the car, took off his shirt, and walked straight into her. I've been sitting in the sand watching him swim for a while. He's the only one out in the water right now, and I'm the only one on the beach. It's empty because it's October, and Samson is insane for being in the water when it's this cold. But I get it. He needs it. Years of therapy rolled up into a swim. He eventually comes back to me, dropping to the sand next to me. He's soaking wet and breathing hard, but he looks content. He said very little on the drive here, but I also haven't asked very much. He's been deprived of everything he loved for so long, I want to give him time to soak it all in before bombarding him with questions about the last few years. He glances behind us.
Does no one live in Marjorie's house?
No. He asks because it's obvious the house hasn't been taken care of since it's been empty. There are shingles missing from the roof, grass grown up around the foundation. Marjorie passed away in March, so Kevin will probably put it up for sale soon. I hated that Samson wasn't able to attend her funeral. I know she meant a lot to him. She even visited him a few times before she died. Samson repositions himself so that he's lying in the sand, his head in my lap. He stares up at me with a look of peaceful content. I drag my fingers through his wet hair and smile down at him.
Where's pepperjack cheese? He asks.
I nod my head at our house. He's an indoor dog now. He and Dad bonded.
What about you and your dad?
I smile. We bonded too. He's been great. Samson brings my hand to his mouth and kisses it. Then he grips it with both hands and presses my palm against his chest, holding my hand there. Everything fell right back into place with him almost as soon as I laid eyes on him today. It's like a single minute never even passed. I have no idea what tomorrow holds, but everything I need is tied up in this moment.
You look different, he says. Better, happier.
I am. I can feel his heart pounding against my palm. I'm not gonna lie, I was so mad at you in the beginning,
But you were right, it was for the best. I never would have left otherwise.
It was awful, he says with a contradicting grin. Complete torture. I can't tell you how many times I almost caved and asked Kevin for your address.
I laugh. Glad to know you thought of me.
Every minute, he says confidently.
He reaches a hand up and touches my cheek. I lean into his palm.
Can I ask you a personal question?
I nod.
Did you date other guys?
I blink twice. I was expecting him to ask me that, but maybe not this soon. He lifts up onto his arm until he's face to face with me. He reaches around me and presses a comforting hand to the back of my neck.
I'm only asking because I'm hoping your answer is yes.
You're hoping I dated other people?
He shrugs, not saying I wouldn't be jealous. I'm just hoping you actually had fun in college and didn't treat your dorm room like a prison cell.
I dated, I say. I even had a boyfriend for a while during junior year.
Was he nice?
I nod. He was, but he wasn't you. I lean forward and kiss him briefly. I made friends, I went out, I made good grades, and I even loved my volleyball team. We were pretty damn good. Samson grins and then resumes his position by laying his head on my thighs.
Good. I don't regret my decision then.
Good.
How's Sarah? Are she and Marco still together?
Yeah, they got married last year. She's 4 months pregnant.
Good for them. I was hoping that would work out. What about his clothing line? Did it ever take off?
I point at a house down the beach. Samson lifts up onto his elbow so he can see where I'm pointing. That's their house. They just finished construction on it 6 months ago.
That yellow one?
Yep.
Damn.
Yeah, the clothing line is doing well. He has a lot of followers on TikTok, so that gave his merch a huge boost. Samson shakes his head.
TikTok?
I laugh. I'll show you later when you get a new phone.
Oh, how the tables have turned, Samson says.
He moves until he's sitting next to me again. He wipes sand from himself.
Can we go see them?
Sarah and Marcos, right now?
Not this second, he says. I want more time to catch up with you. I'd also like to see your father. I owe him an apology or 10.
Yeah, that's not going to be easy.
I know. But I'm persistent.
Samson wraps an arm around me and pulls me to him. He kisses the top of my head.
What am I supposed to call you, Sean or Samson? Samson, he says immediately. I've never felt more myself than when I was with you that summer. That's exactly who I want to be, forever.
I wrap my arms around my knees and bury my mouth into my elbow to hide my smile.
Where do you live now? Samson asks me.
I nod my head at my father's beach house, staying with my father and Alana this week, but I have an apartment in Houston. I'm in law school.
No way.
I laugh. I am. Just started my first semester in August. Samson shakes his head with a mixture of pride and disbelief on his face.
I didn't know that's what you wanted to do.
I didn't know either until you were arrested. Kevin has been really helpful. I'm actually about to start an internship at his office.
Samson smiles softly. I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
I took some college classes in prison, he says. I'm gonna try to get into school somewhere if anyone will take me.
His eyes drift away after he says that, like he's worried for all the challenges he's about to face. What was prison like? He sighs.
Real, real shitty. I give it a 1 out of 10. Do not recommend.
I laugh. What's the next step? Where are you gonna stay? Samson shrugs.
Kevin has all that info. Says he set something temporary up for me. I was supposed to call him as soon as I was released, actually.
My mouth drops open. Samson, it's been 4 hours. You haven't called him?
I don't have a phone. I was gonna ask if I could use yours, but I've been a little sidetracked.
I roll my eyes and take out my cell phone. If you violate parole over something this stupid, I'm driving you to jail myself. Samson brushes sand from his hands and takes the phone after I dial Kevin's number. Kevin answers after the second ring. I haven't heard from him yet, Kevin says, assuming it's me calling. I promised I would call you as soon as I did.
Samson smiles at me as he speaks into my phone.
It's me, Kevin. I'm out.
There's a pause on Kevin's end before he says,
This is Bea's number. You're with her?
Yep.
Where are you?
We're at the beach.
Can Bea hear me? Kevin asks.
Yes, I say, leaning toward the phone.
I guess you were right about him.
Sure was, I say with a smile.
I told you you're gonna make one hell of a lawyer with that kind of commitment, Kevin says. Listen, Samson, you listening?
Yep.
I'm going to email you the information for your parole officer today. You have 7 days to check in with him. You'll find your key under the rock to the right of the trash can.
Samson glances at me and raises a brow.
What key? The key to my mother's house.
Samson looks over his shoulder at Marjorie's home.
I don't know what you mean. Yeah, I know. My mother made me promise not to tell you until after you were released, which is why I instructed you to call me as soon as you got out. You follow instructions terribly. The deed is at my office. I can bring it by sometime this week. I tried to do what I could with the house, but life has been busy. It needs a lot of work.
The look of disbelief on Samson's face is something I wish I could take a picture of. I'm sure the same look is splashed across my own face.
Is this a joke? Samson asks. No. You made some stupid mistakes, but you also did a lot of good for a lot of people in that community, my mother being one of them. She thought you deserved to be able to call that place your home because she knew how much you loved it.
Samson releases a trembling breath and then drops the phone in the sand. He pushes off the ground and walks away from his conversation with Kevin. He pauses near the water and grips the back of his neck. I pick up the phone and wipe the sand off of it. Can we call you back later, Kevin?
Is everything okay?
I watch Samson as he struggles to absorb everything Kevin just told him. Yeah, I think he just needs a while to process this. After ending the call, I walk over to Samson and stand in front of him and lift my hands, wiping the tears away from his cheeks like he's done for me so many times. He shakes his head.
I don't deserve that house, Bea.
I take his face in my hands and tilt it until his focus is on mine. You've been punished enough. Accept all the good things life is throwing at you today. He blows out a quick breath and pulls me in tightly. I don't let him hug me for long because I'm too excited to find that key. I grab his hand and pull him away from the beach. Come on, I want to see your house. We find the key exactly where Kevin said it would be. When Samson goes to insert it into the lock on the door, his hands are shaking. He has to pause for a moment and press his palms into the doorframe. This can't be real, he whispers. It's dark when we walk inside, but I can see the layer of dust on the floors before he flips on a light. There's a musty, salty smell to the place, but knowing Samson, those are things he'll have fixed by tomorrow. He touches everything as we walk through the house. The cabinets, the walls, the doorknobs, all of Marjorie's furniture that's still here. He goes into every room and sighs in all of them like he can't believe this is his life. I can't believe it either. Samson finally opens the door to the stairwell that leads to the roof access. I follow him up the stairs and onto the roof where he takes a seat. He spreads his legs and pats the area of space between them, wanting me to sit with him. I lower myself to the roof and then lean back against Samson's shoulder. He wraps his arms around me, and as beautiful as the view is from here, I squeeze my eyes shut because I've missed the feelings I have for him so much, more than I even knew. I've gone so long trying not to feel them, I was starting to worry I no longer felt anything. But the feelings were never gone, they never left. I just forced everything to sleep so it wouldn't hurt as much. Every now and then, Samson shakes his head in total disbelief. I've known him to be a quiet person since I met him, but he's never been this speechless around me.
I love his reaction. I love getting to witness his life change for the better right before my eyes. Look at us, two lonely kids who slipped through all the cracks, but then climbed right back up to the top of the world. Samson touches my face, urging me to tilt my head back so that I can see him. He's looking at me in the way I saw him look at me so many times that summer, like I'm the most interesting thing on this peninsula. He kisses me, then lowers his head and presses his lips to my shoulder. He rests his mouth against my skin for a while, as if he's making up for all the years he couldn't kiss me there.
I love you.
Those three words are a simple whisper against my skin, but they provide enough pressure that I feel my heart bone heal completely. I lean my head back against his shoulder and look out at the water. I love you too, Samson.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Heartbones, written by Colleen Hoover, performed by Angela Gothels. Executive producers Rena Ayer and Mike Charzuk. Producers Sarah Kosa Paglusa. Copyright 2020 by Colleen Hoover. Sound recording copyright 2020 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.